This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back. It's episode of the Cooler Jets podcast. Rose Ben Blessington and Michael Nania. Well, Michael, we're here. First podcast of 2024. The season, our long national nightmare, is over. Unfortunately, you made a grave mistake yesterday. Went for a joke. Didn't quite land, and now you are stuck as the Patriots mascot for all of eternity. So, I don't know. Can you walk the people through what happened?
Well, I was pro-tank, as I think over 50% of Jets fans were. I did put out a poll before the game, and more than half of people who voted said they were pro-tank. So I wasn't alone in that. And if you weren't pro-tank, I'm perfectly fine with that. Everyone's okay to root for the team however they please. But I was pro-tank, so as the game's going on, I decided to try to voice that in a joking way by changing my Twitter profile to a Patriots logo. And I've done this before. I was doing it last year when we were rooting for other teams for the Jets' playoff hopes. You know, different type of situation as tanking. But nonetheless, change it to a Patriots logo. I was tweeting out, let's go Zappy, hashtag go Pats. And thought it was going to be all fun and games, and I change it back to my normal picture afterward. But for whatever reason, I'm not able to change my picture back for the time being. Hopefully, Twitter fixes and allows me to fix it sometime soon. But it seems like poetic justice, and it's what I get for rooting for the hated New England Patriots.
People are so mad about that.
Patriot right now.
People were so mad about you changing your logo to the page. It's like, I mean, I'll be honest, the sight of this logo is a bit jarring. Like, I don't really like looking at it. It's just so many bad negative.
I could change it. By the way, if you're listening, I was off screen. I'm just the Patriots logo. I was for the first 2 minutes here, but I'm back now. I'll change.
You're on a roll with these jokes,
so we don't have to be subjected to it.
Yeah, please.
There we go.
Well, Michael. Oh, no, nice solid toothpaste.
You gotta zoom it back. Robert Saleh brushing his teeth.
Yeah, I like to switch my background up every episode. I'm just going with the stoic Zach Wilson to end the season. Well, Michael, season's over. Thank God. We're recording this Monday. What a year. We're recording this Monday. All indications is that everybody's coming back. I seriously don't know what it would take. I mean, that's really what I wanted to add. If I was a beat writer and I was in the press conference with Saleh when he says all three coordinators are returning, there shouldn't be any sweeping staff changes. Now, we'll see. Sometimes they might say something, and then on Wednesday you might get a Todd Downing has been fired, Keith Carter's, who knows? But it sounds like from, you know, Keith Carter's done an excellent job, all three coordinators are returning, there won't be any sweeping staff. It sounds like everybody's coming back. And my question to you, Mike, would be, what would it take?
Saleh.
I'm looking at your background. Seriously, what would have to happen? Would they have to be the most penalized team in football, which they are? Would they have to have the worst red zone offense in football after the offense coordinator was the red zone guy for Green Bay? Would they have to have the least amount of, or some of the other stats from your article, wide open plays, highest blitz, or unpicked up blitzes? What were some of the other ones? Help me out. You wrote the article. You're the brains of this operation.
Those are most of them right there. That's screens. The majority of it.
I mean, yep. How bad would things have had to have gone? I knew once, and like you, I was cheering for the Patriots. I was more so cheering for the Jets to lose than cheering for the Patriots. There was I did have a feeling of joy seeing Bill Belichick freezing his ass off, angrily, you know, sauntering off the field and for one last time ignoring the Jets head coach in the post-game handshake. Like, that did bring me some joy to see Belichick in what could be, we don't know yet, his last ever game losing to the Jets. Like, that was nice. I like to see Breece Hall put the dagger in him, but I was cheering for the Jets to lose, maybe get up to 5 or 6 in the draft order, guarantee they're going to get one of the top tackles. They're picking 10th. The last time they picked 10th, they took Garrett Wilson. There will be great players on the board when the Jets pick, so it's not the end of the world. But I wanted what was better for the team, and I was kind of hoping in the back of my head that if they lost in ugly enough fashion, maybe this organization would be forced to look in the mirror and maybe not come back with the same exact rodeo as this past season. But alas, the Jets win. They get the dagger with the Breece Hall touchdown. They can walk into 2024 saying that we're 1-0. We're building great momentum heading into the next season. And we won three of our last five games. And things are turning around here. And we can kind of act like everything's all good and fine. And whatever. That's what's going to happen. It doesn't seem like anybody's going to get fired. Maybe Downing. But saying Keith Carter's praises. So who knows. I was hoping on the small chance that they can improve their draft stock. And maybe if it was bad enough, Sala would say, you know what, in a make or break year, maybe I shouldn't tie myself to Hackett. But it does seem that with Aaron Rodgers, they're tied to Hackett. I don't know why they're tied to Keith Carter and Todd Downing, but we'll see. And they're going to run it back next year. And maybe Aaron Rodgers and an offseason to fix the offensive line and to add another receiver will fix it all. I'm not too optimistic. But that's the way things stand. And to be optimistic, because slowly you'll watch this devolve over this offseason. I'll slowly get suckered back into believing in the Jets and predicting a playoff run and maybe even a Super Bowl. Just give me a couple weeks. But to be optimistic, this is still a great defense. The Jets do have some great young players on offense. They'll be able to add some more this offseason. And for the first time in a while, they do have a quarterback waiting in the wings, a legitimate Hall of Fame quarterback. We'll see what he looks like coming off the torn Achilles. But at the very least, he's going to give them better than what they got this year. And not only is he going to bring something in terms of, you know, on the field as the quarterback, but he's going to mask a lot of Hackett as long as he stays healthy, because Rodgers is going to get to the line. He's going to see what the defense is in. He's going to audible into whatever concept he wants. He'll change the protections and he'll mask a lot of the ugliness from Hackett. Rodgers will be our offensive coordinator this year. But if he goes down, if he's not the same, if the offensive line falls apart, if things start to devolve, it could get ugly pretty quick. And so that sets the stage, Michael, for a massive offseason. Every offseason is big. I think every offseason we've had on this podcast, we've said, is the biggest offseason. But this, Michael, is bar none the biggest offseason since we've been doing this podcast, at the least. We started in 2019. You have a ready-to-go defense. You have some great players on a rookie contract. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback. Make or break year for this regime. Let's see what happens. We'll be doing our team awards today, Michael. We made about, I think it was 25. We might've gone a little over. We have all sorts of awards from this year. Some more serious than others. Some, you know, we had some fun with, but before we get into that, Michael, your last thoughts on week 18, the Jets winning, them picking 10th, the stage for the offseason. Next week, we'll have a podcast that'll be a little bit more about, you know, things the Jets need to do this offseason. And then as the deeper into the offseason we get, we'll obviously have mock drafts and free agency and plans to fix the Jets. But for right now, Michael, we're going to just look back at 2023 right in this moment. How are you feeling? And what do you think about some of the quotes that came out of Florham Park today?
Well, I mean, there's a lot you said there that I could touch on, but I guess let's start with what you said about, you know, the coaching coming back, pretty much the entire staff, and there not really being anything that could have forced them out. I don't think there's anything that could have, you know, forced the organization to make a change, because it couldn't have been worse. It never has been worse. That's the thing that I want to keep reiterating, because that's the facts. It's never been this bad. And we've seen a lot of bad football, but this is the worst offensive DVOA the Jets have ever had since 1981, which is the first year when they started tracking that. So that's 43 seasons. They've never had a DVOA this bad. It's the worst in the NFL since the 2018 Cardinals, the 14th worst among any team, and that's over 1,300 teams that you've had over those 40-plus seasons. So it doesn't get any worse than this. You can make as many excuses as you want, but every bad Jets offense we've ever watched was better than this. So I don't think there's anything that could have changed it. I think they made up their mind when Rodgers got hurt that this year does not matter. Everyone gets a pass for it no matter what happens. And you're all coming back. But as I've said a bunch of times, I think that's completely foolish, because you still could have evaluated all these coaches regardless of Rodgers being there. You still had a chance to see, like, okay, how do you respond to this adversity? How do you manage the talent you have, make the best of this situation? And they made the absolute worst of it. So I think They definitely should have cleaned house. I mean, I've said what I, you know, my piece on Salah. I think he should have been fired as well. But at the very least, it should not have been a discussion to clean house on offense. But we're not even doing that. So I don't know. It's I'm going to be optimistic and try to see the good in it. And the Jets can win the Super Bowl next year with Aaron Rodgers coming in. Anything is possible. But it's very hard to be optimistic with this group of coaches after what they just did this year and the whole body of work that they've all put together at this point. Whether you're looking at Salah over 3 years, Douglas over four full seasons, and Hackett, his entire career as an offensive coordinator, outside of when Matt LaFleur is carrying him for 3 years. It's just very hard to feel confident in that. So I'm going to buy in, and we're going to be optimistic over the offseason, and I will hope for the best. And there absolutely is a scenario where this all works out and the Jets win the Super Bowl. And we make fun of these podcasts, but you know, being objective right now, like if I were a Patriots fan, which I guess I am right now, I would be laughing at this team and I wouldn't be afraid of what their future looks like at all. So it's very disappointing, to say the least. And I'm not just going to waver on that because I'm a fan and I want to make the best of it. I think it's very foolish to bring all these coaches back, and I don't understand why. So they're going to be better with Aaron Rodgers. He'll add a couple wins, three wins. Maybe they'll make the playoffs. That's if he stays healthy, which is not guaranteed. But I just don't see a Super Bowl ceiling or, you know, even like a playoff win. Like, I think they can make the wild card and anything can happen in one game. But I just, it's hard to see Robert Saleh, Nathaniel Hackett, Todd Downing, Keith Carter, and that offensive line that he coached.
They better fire Downing.
The questions that he brought in. It's just, especially like that's a, like you could have just picked those guys as a scapegoat. At least that's what we thought they were going to do, and they're not even doing that.
I think Downing. Just,
I mean, we'll see. But it seemed like solid.
He was. Wasn't
everyone's going to come back?
Wasn't he opt? I could be wrong, but after last year, didn't he say there wouldn't be any changes, and then they fired LaFleur a couple days later after they went through their process? So
yeah,
I don't anticipate a Hackett firing.
But I mean, I'm just really disappointed in the organization's just complacent mentality. It feels like everything they say is so satisfied for a team that had 15 wins, 18 wins the last three. I'm bad at math. I'm a Patriots fan right now. 18 wins the past 3 years. But every single quote they say here, and we'll have a superlative later that's related to quotes and stuff, but everything they're saying in these exit interviews are, we're so close, we're right there, people don't see it. Like, can you have some accountability and look yourselves in the mirror and say, we sucked on offense. It has never been this bad. We are garbage. We need to be better. And they're just hanging their hats on because Aaron Rodgers is coming back. It's all going to be perfect. Like, we all know it's going to be better, obviously. But do you have any semblance of remorse for the product you put out there this year? That was an absolute embarrassment to not only the team, but the entire sport. It set the whole league back the way they played this year. So it really bothers me. Like, I don't understand how you could look at that and just be like, we're good. What are you people looking at? It's like they're gaslighting the fan base into thinking like, you don't know what you're watching. Like, we're right there. Can you not
see
that?
He has had a number of quotes that you've pushed back on Twitter where he's been like, we've increased our motion rate, and then they haven't increased rate, or they've gotten better. What are you saying?
That too. Like, he's like pretty much, I'm not going to accuse him of lying because I'm sure there's something behind that.
It's hard to go stand up in front of the media after this. Like, there's nothing really he can say that would satisfy the fan base. So like,
right. Like,
I don't take what he says that seriously.
I don't want to read it. I don't want to know. I mean, seems like I'm taking what he's saying seriously, but more so in the actions than the words, because the words are just backing up the actions. That's the thing. Like, it's, if they fire the coaches, like, I don't care what you say, like, you fire the coaches, you're trying to make improvements, that's what matters. But when you don't do that and you come out here and say all these things that make it seem like you really believe Aaron Rodgers is just going to fix everything, it, you know, really makes me question their ability to self-evaluate the roster and improve the roster. And that Douglas is out here saying Dalvin Cook was a good decision at the time, and it's 2020 hindsight to say that was wrong, when I came out here and gave you every single fact that told you it wasn't going to work out, and everything I said did happen. Not that I know everything, because I was wrong about a lot of things. We're going to talk about it, some of our worst takes later. But there was a lot of strong evidence that wasn't going to work, and it did not work out. So it wasn't like that was an amazing signing that just happen to not work out. So I don't know. A lot of the things they're saying are really frustrating to me.
Yeah, like I don't take what they say seriously because I get that it's like, what else is he supposed to say? But at the same time, like if they had gotten blown out against New England, one, would they have made any staff changes? Probably no. And then their line would probably have been like, well, it was snowing, so you know, were we supposed to do anything on offense? Like that's just kind of the how they've operated the last couple of years, is they're just quick to make these excuses. I guess the one thing I will say is, outside of the Miami game, I guess the offense has been better the last 5 weeks of the season. Like they did move the ball against the Texans, and they were able to run the ball in New England, which isn't necessarily a small feat in the snow when people know they're going to run the ball. Like Breece Hall was able to get something going, but it's still like, how low is the bar? You know, like how low does the bar have? Like we're accepting, okay, well maybe we'll be the 26th ranked offense the last 5 weeks. Actually, what is their DVOA the last 5 weeks of the season on offense? And that includes a shutout against Miami. I don't know if you can look that up while I'm.
I have to check it.
That is what he's kind of clinging to, is the improvement.
Yeah, like I mean, he's claiming they improved because like you see some decent points on the scoreboard, but you think about it more, and it's like Cleveland, they had a defensive touchdown and a field goal set up in opponent territory. They only had like 10 points. Washington, most of those points were set up for them off turnovers. Houston, they had 3 fake field goals that were set up for them. New England, like, congrats, you scored 17 points. Go build a statue. Like, okay, that's awesome. Are we supposed to be happy for you? Like, I don't understand. I don't know. Usually I don't read into the quotes too much and all that, but they just seem so satisfied and so sure that they're right there. And, like, they, I don't know.
Do you think the running game looked better at the end of the season? Would you give Keith Carter any credit for the way that blocking looked at the end of the year for the run game? Because they were able, Breece Hall was able to get going the last few weeks of the season. I'm trying to be somewhat. The last 3 weeks, he had some good games. And the first 3 weeks, it didn't look like they could block anybody. So, you know, at least there's
that. Washington's the worst defense in the league. So who cares what you do against them? I guess New England was good, but they ran it like 50 times. It wasn't really that efficient. I don't know. I don't have anything positive to say about them.
The other negative too, and we promise we're going to get to the awards, is like, okay, I am optimistic about Rodgers coming back and masking a lot of Hackett. But, you know, while we like to say, well, Hackett was the OC and Rodgers back-to-back MVP years, not really accurate because LaFleur runs that offense. So there's nobody in LaFleur. And like, there were plenty of times where you'd watch Rodgers during those MVP years and he would be, you'd look upset with LaFleur. They'd be arguing. They'd be going back and forth. And I think it's probably a good thing for Rodgers to have some sort of adversary, somebody who's forcing him to be better, somebody who's not just his buddy who's going to side with whatever he's saying. Because while I do think Rodgers is a smart guy, he needs somebody to push against him, right? And it seems like Hackett, especially after Rodgers is completely saving his job, is not going to be that guy. Like, who's the guy in the room that's going to hold Rodgers accountable for
nobody.
For their offense?
He owns the
and
team. He is the owner. Like,
so that's the other concern I have. And it's like, okay, Hackett was their red zone guy, and they're the worst red zone team in the league this year. And you would at least expect, like, okay, maybe the play calling wouldn't be as good this year, but in the red zone, maybe they would have some sort of creative looks. Because you raised that point in that article you wrote. It's like a lot of red zone offense is just scheming. I mean, teams know when you're the Chiefs and you're inside the 10, you're looking for Travis Kelce. So it's on Andy Reid to scheme somebody open to either get Kelce open or to use that against the defense and get somebody else open on a shovel pass or a trick play or whatever. Like the level of creativity we saw from the Jets in the red zone was so uninspiring that it's like, all right, was this guy really in charge of the red zone or was it Rodgers at the line of scrimmage, which the Jets will get, but they won't have that counterweight in LaFleur, who's proven this year with Jordan Love, he's still a great offensive coordinator and he can counter what Rodgers is thinking. They can work together from two different viewpoints, or maybe they see things similarly, but at least there's some sort of, I don't even know, some sort of what, like combative juices? I don't know how to describe it, but like with Hackett, it seems like there's going to be no resistance to what Rodgers is saying. Maybe it'll work. Maybe Rodgers is the smartest guy in the league, but I worry about that. So I'm hoping that at the very least, all right, you're going to say, hey, we really improved as an offensive line down the stretch. We had so many injuries. The talent wasn't too great to begin with. Keith Carter, welcome back. Maybe the continuity will help in the line. Fine. All right, fine. I would have clean house if you're not going to fire Hackett, but fine. But Downing, What's the point for Downing's? And we don't know he will. Maybe he will get fired by the time you're listening to this podcast. But what could possibly be the logic for Downing staying, who's in charge of designing the passing offense? I think you could bring in somebody else, some other young offensive assistant from around the league to come in, look at this offense, and bring some new ideas to work into this offense, some new passing concepts. How is it possible that you couldn't poach somebody from Miami or San Francisco? Hell, go back to Green Bay. Maybe there's somebody Rodgers worked with that has some creative offensive passing concepts that they could work into this offense that Hackett and Rodgers are going to call together, I guess. But if they run it back with the same group, it's like, okay, Rodgers might take them a little bit further, but I don't have any confidence that they're not going to run into some defensive coordinator that can out-scheme them. Maybe they don't. But then if 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers isn't able to play all 18 games plus a playoff run, what are they going to look like? Probably the same. So that's where a lot of my pessimism comes from. There is plenty to be optimistic about, and I think part of the reason we're so angry is because the Jets are on the cusp. They are on the cusp, at the very least, snapping that playoff streak, but they're on the cusp of something greater, and they're settling for complacency. And that's why I think we're getting so upset, because clearly this team is better than they were 2 years ago, or they were during the Bulls era, or the Idzik era. They actually have a chance to do something, and they're settling for Nathaniel Hackett, Todd Downing, and Keith Carter. And it's like, all right, Sala, make or break year. You're hitching your wagon to Hackett, but we'll see what happens. And it's very possible a year from now, it won't go that well. We'll fire everybody. Maybe Rodgers wants to play another year, and we'll be stuck with him choosing our new head coach, and that could be a disaster. And it's hard as a Jets fan to not fear for the worst. There's plenty to be excited about. We will turn over the next few weeks onto being excited about 2024, but right now, it's frustrating. Before we get to the awards, I mean, just last thing on kind of your mentality heading into, do you think they at least should fire Downing? I mean, somebody has to get fired for the level of ineptitude. You can't just look at like, well, we won three of our last five and we were able to run the ball better. It's like, that's why I was kind of hoping they would get blown out against New England so they couldn't say that. So they couldn't say, well, we're starting the year off on the right note. Like, I know there are plenty of Jets fans who are getting upset and being like, you're not a real fan. It's like, all right, is it really that hard to understand the logic here to be like, let's get a higher pick. Let's force the Jets to maybe make some offensive changes that screw the Pats out of the top pick. Is it really that hard to see the logic there? But I'm not going to tell you how to root, but whatever. But instead, it's like, all right, we'll pick 10th. That's fine. The Patriots will have a top three pick. They'll get some top quarterback. We've certainly taken plenty that haven't worked out. That might be fine. But at the very least, I'm sick of the Jets being able to parade another momentum swing at the end of the season. That won't matter 8 months from now, week one. This what win 2019, in the snow.
The 6-2 finish of 2019. What did that lead to? These wins Nothing. Don't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. But whatever. Whatever. Should we just get to the awards or do anything else you want to say?
We should get to the awards. I guess we have a little bit more to wrap up. But yeah, the thing about like Root... The thing about the tanking and which side you want to be on as a fan is like, can we just all let everyone do what they want to do? Like, I was pro tank, but if you want to root for them to win, like, by all means, go ahead and do that. I personally argue that tanking is better. I think you're stupid, but no, for real. Like, you can do that if you want. Like, I wish I could be that way and just watch my football team and want them to win every week and just have fun and not be concerned about, we got to win the Super Bowl. We got to lose to get better draft position so we can win the Super Bowl. I wish I could be that way, and I'm jealous of you. But at the same time, like, I think it's okay for you to do that. So if you're a pro-win person, can you just let the tankers have their fun? And if you're a pro-tank person, just let the pro-win people have their fun. Like, everyone's allowed to root for them however you want. You can watch football games and root for every game to be 0-0. And, like, you don't care about winning or losing. You just
no
like
impact on the team.
No scoring. You just, that's what you like. Or you could watch because you like hearing the announcers talk, but you hate football. I don't know. You could watch for whatever reason you want. Or you could watch because you like the commercials. Just let people watch it how they want to watch it. We actually have some superlatives about that, too. Good. That should be that's pretty true. Fun. But yeah, just let people root for the team how they want to root for the team is what I would say. Because I don't have any issue with rooting for wins at the end of the season or anyone wants to do it. But personally, I thought tanking was better. And yes, the Jets can still get a superstar at number 10. Garrett Wilson was number 10. Tom Brady, all that. Like, whatever. You could draft a superstar anywhere. But it is objectively better to be – I think they would have ended up sixth because the – who won? The Giants won. and the Titans won. So they would have ended up at six. It is, like, based on history, every slot in the first round of the draft does have a better chance of giving you a star than the one after it. So it is better. And looking at this class, like, there are going to be some top offensive linemen, which is that pitch, that position that we want. There are going to be some top guys we miss out on being at number 10 instead of sixth, or they could have been second or third if they lost that Commanders game as well. So, yeah, I was pro tanking at the end of the season, and also because of the reason that you said, like, I wish it wasn't this way, and, you know, the owners could just evaluate, you know, beyond wins and losses.
But evaluate the season that actually unfolded, not this pseudo, like, positive.
Exactly.
We're 1-0 in 2024.
Right. Like, it shouldn't be hard. Like, we have the ability to see, like, I don't care how many games you won or how you finish. Like, we see the product, but the owner's just like, how many games did you win? How did you finish? Because they don't know anything about football. They're 90 years old, and they just get a team because they were born rich.
They
don't know anything. They don't know absolutely anything about football. So they're the guys making the decisions. So they see wins and, like, they finish strong and, like, whatever. But that's why another reason I would have liked for them to have lost, like, just make it obvious to these people who don't know anything about football.
The truth is we have no impact and all these players are going to play to win. That's just the truth that you encounter at the end of every season. And you can't expect them to drop, what would it have been, six in a row, seven at the end of the season. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. But it would be nice to be picking higher and guarantee a top tackle. There will still be good offensive linemen on the board. There will still be great players on the board, whether they're able to shore up offensive line in free agency and take a receiver, or maybe they take Brock Bowers as a tight end. I won't pretend to have really dove into this draft class outside of a few mock drafts and a few YouTube highlights. So I don't feel like we're in any position to be giving draft takes yet, but that will come. For now, Michael, let's take a look back at 2023, hopefully for the last time. Actually, we'll probably have some other pods, but team awards for this season. We have a lot here. I don't know if it was...
Try to be quick, 2 hours later.
Yeah, this is like 20-something awards here. So let's just start. Let's start with some of the easy ones.
They get progressively more unhinged as
they do get unhinged. We wrote a lot. We had to delete some. We'll start with an easy one. Team MVP. Now, for the team MVP that the players voted on, they voted for Quincy Williams, which is a fair choice. I think you can make the argument that he deserved it this year. But most valuable player, Michael, I'll cede the floor to you first. We don't know each other's answers, so there might be some repeats here, but whatever. Team MVP for you, Michael. Who'd you go with?
This is a tough one. I think it's between the two Pro Bowlers. But I went back and forth, but I'm going with Quinnen Williams. I think the two phase impact compared to Sauce, and, like, you could pick it either one, but just the way that he carried both phases, I think, makes him more valuable to the defense's success. Especially you look at the D-line at the end of the year. Quentin Jefferson goes out, and, you know, the run defense gets pretty soft. Like, they are really, you know, Quinnen Williams is what separates that run defense from being, you know, okay, which is about what it was this year, versus, like, you take him out, that's probably a bad run defense. And then his pass rushing. Sacks weren't really there, but his pressures were on another level, even compared to last year. He was drawing double teams, making things easy for everyone. The anchor of that pass rush. I think he is the most valuable player in the team.
I was going to, and I don't want to do this with everyone, but I did want to ask you. The Jets defense played lights out for most of the season. I would still qualify them as an elite unit. But I think they finished the year 25th in run defense. And I think it dropped a lot after Al Woods, and their offense was terrible, so teams were running on them a lot. But I was going to ask you, it's like, it didn't seem that, but then I guess I'm thinking back, it's like, okay, I guess there were some games where it really got blown
out. I mean, they were, so I'm looking at the numbers here, they were 30th in the number of carries against them, which you expect, because they're mostly losing. In terms of yards per attempt, they were 11th. So I think the 25th is pretty misleading.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess that's why you have to look beyond that. I just saw that tweet that I was
like, geez, that's 25th? The surface level analysis you'll get from most
that
of the
that you're going to get from me.
Beat writers. 25th. Yeah.
Team MVP, I wrote Quinnen as well. I was stuck between, I thought about Quincy because I think you can make a real argument that he really was the MVP this year. He made a huge difference. Sauce is obviously an unbelievable player and will go down in the Ring of Honor, especially with the pace that he's on. But because they had that one Eagles game where they had Craig James and Bryce Hall strapping up A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, I was like, who is the actual most valuable player? I mean, probably Aaron Rodgers is probably the answer here, but Quinnen Williams, in terms of, like you said, I mean, he affects everything that this defense does. And without him, the lack of interior, I mean, you even saw it when they lost Al Woods in the run game. You saw it when they lost Quentin Jefferson in the pass game. If they lost Quinnen Williams, this defense would look so much different. He's a terrific player. I'm glad he got a couple sacks to end the season to round out his numbers, but the sack fall off shouldn't be misleading. He was as dominant as he was last year. Fantastic player. The team LVP, the least valuable player. Now, there's a lot of different ways you could attack this, Michael. You could just try to think of the worst player on the team. You could think of the team that's caught the player that's cost the team the most. I don't know if you want to attack this, the least valuable player. I can go first on this one.
I mean,
if you
to
want.
Me, it, I guess I'll go first. I mean, to me, it's like cumulatively who hurt them the most. Like, it's not Jake Hansen or some random backup. It's like who in the end like costs them the most. And there's a couple candidates here, but I think you have to go with Mekhi Becton. I mean, in the end, he leads tackles and sacks allowed. He's up there in pressures. He's up there in penalties. Just the number of negative plays over the course of the season, way too many stacked up over the course of the year. So I think that's where I'm going.
Not a bad pick. Not a bad pick. I went similarly on the offensive line. I went with Laken Tomlinson. I think you could make the argument that Becton may have had the worst season, but because of the money that they've invested in Laken Tomlinson, Becton, you can make the argument that they took him over Wirfs. But with Laken Tomlinson, he got paid for 2023, for 2024, his cap number is $18 million. This guy is one of the highest paid players on the team. They paid him to be the anchor of this offensive line. I'm trying to think the exact term they used, but remember that in Flight 22, whatever it was, when they're showing the offseason meetings, they said, do you think he can be this guy, like the spark plug guy or whatever they called him? The guy who was going to motivate the rest of the group, the glue guy, the guy to keep the line together. He's been durable, so you can give him that. But he's been awful, and he's robbing money from the Jets. And he's taking money away from them being able to turn around and pay a better player for a fraction of the price. I mean, they'll be able to cut him. I'm trying to see if they cut him. They can free up $8 million, but they'll have to pay Laken Tomlinson $10 million to not be on this team, and then another $8 million over the next few years in void money. He's awful. I think they should cut him and take that $8 million. They'll be able to find a better guard. I mean, Nate Herbig was better, and how much did he get paid? They'll be able to find somebody else that's an upgrade over Laken Tomlinson. They shouldn't. It's a sunk cost. I know he's durable. He's maybe well liked in the locker room, but to me, he's the least valuable player just because of the cap percentage. And
his durability only makes him less valuable because he just plays more games being bad. Just gives him more chances to allow sacks.
All right. Now, you wrote this one. You wrote the Calvin Pace Award, which was most mid player. I don't think Calvin Pace was that mid. You saw him at the end of his career when he was a little bit more. I mean, you watched him earlier. But, like, he was pretty damn good in those first few years for Rex. I mean,
I was trying to think of a good – do you have another player you could – name that after?
Most mid player that the Jets have had. I mean,
Jameson Crowder Award.
Crowder's not a bad one. I'm trying to think of a good one from like the earlier days. Think of the 2010 Jets. Who was like a really mid player? I feel like they're all either all good or bad. I'm sure somebody's screaming. I have fond memories of like all these guys. I'm trying to think of like who did I not like on that team? Lito Shepherd.
What about like 2013? Brian Winters. The Brian Winters.
He was pretty good in 2013 because didn't he get a contract extension? Or was it 2014 he was good? One of the years he was good and that got him paid. Yeah, you're right. He was drafted 20. He was good in 2014 or 15 and then he got a contract extension. I don't know. Well, most mid player. I'll think of somebody from the other teams. But most mid player, drum roll please. Again, it kind of felt like it was either going to be. When you look at this roster, it's like either this guy's great or he's terrible. There's a few guys you could go with here. Ultimately, I went with Jordan Whitehead, who I'm sure will come up in another category later, maybe a few categories later in this award show. But I would say Jordan Whitehead, he's been pretty – it's hard to call him bad, and then you see players come in and say he does a lot in terms of the communication of the defense, and that is one of those things, admittedly, that we can't really grade him on because we're not in the meeting rooms. We don't know what he does for this team in the film room or on the field and communicating. And he had that 4-pick game against Josh Allen. but missed tackles, allowed touchdowns, beefing with people on Twitter. I think he's the most mid player. And then for the contract, you may be able to go even lower. I would just say most mid player, I'd say Whitehead. He's not the worst safety in the league, far from the best. Most mid, Jordan Whitehead. Who'd you go with?
I'm going to stay around the same spot as you. I'm going to say Tony Adams. I think first season as a starter, as a young guy, really good start. But, you know, he wasn't particularly great. You know, there were some missed tackles in there. But he did make some good plays, had some clutch interceptions throughout the year, some good tackles in the box. I think overall he would, you know, doesn't stand out to me as particularly great or bad, which is a great start for your first season as a starter. So he could become a plus in the future. But he's probably qualifies for me.
All right. Funniest moment of the season. Now, Michael, there's a lot to choose
funniest
from here.
Funniest moment.
And I actually did the whole, I wrote down some answers here. I know you're doing it off the cuff, so maybe you'll get a more
I'm going off
answer.
The cuff.
So I'll go first on some of these. Funniest moment, I'm going to say.
Is it like something that made you like laugh out loud
it could be
in the moment?
Right. It could be funny out of ridiculousness. It could be funny because it was so stupid. It could be funny because it was, I don't know. But funniest moment of the season for me, Michael, it was the Jets' last second comeback against the Giants, watching like Sean Marash, the WFAN host, posting like the JTS suck, suck, suck in the rain. And then Zach Wilson leading the Jets down the field in 24 seconds, which produced a terrific graphic, 24 seconds, no problem. I just think that ending, technically it's an away game. I wish I was at the stadium, but seeing the reaction from Giants fans after the Jets somehow winning that game when they had no right to win that, I think that was the funniest moment. That was the moment that made me laugh the most. It was laughter out of joy. There's probably more ridiculous and angry laughing moments. I mean, I started to laugh when Rodgers was injured. I realize that's probably more of a defense mechanism or whatever. Actual funniest moment, I would say, if we're gonna go positive, I would say the Jets comeback against the Giants was made me laugh pretty hysterically watching all those tweets from Giants fans. How about you?
I think it has to be Zach Wilson falling.
Oh, get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here.
I mean, that's pretty funny.
Oh,
come on.
Get out of here.
That's funny.
No, that was just, I've never seen a player that's get funny. Bullied as much as Zach Wilson gets bullied. Like the media just shits all over this poor kid. Okay.
That's funny.
It's not that
not
funny.
Bullying. I was a Zach Wilson defender this year. It just sums up the season really well.
I guess so. I guess it was most ridiculous moment. All right. Ugliest uniform game of the season, Michael. Ugliest uniform.
Oh, also, I guess on top of that, you could also add Hail Mary pick six leading into Sala commercial at halftime. That's a pretty good.
Well, that's coming up later.
Good
for me.
Combo. There.
That's coming up later for me. I didn't want to.
Okay. Okay. No spoilers.
Ugliest uniform game. I'm gonna go with the Jets Browns game from 2 weeks ago. I don't think the all green with the white.
Really?
The all green with the white socks is my least favorite combination in prime time. It just reminds me of the seeing ghosts. The brown and the or and the brown and the sorry the green and the orange is just kind of eh. So I would say that was the ugliest uniform game for me. How about you?
I don't know if that was the worst. That wasn't great. A couple come to mind here as I look down the schedule. I think the Cowboys game. Didn't love how the green on white looked in Dallas there. The Falcons game, that's another – a lot of green jersey picks here, so that tells you something. We need better green jerseys with this uniform change. Those are probably the
you
two
wanna know one that,
candidates for
that,
me.
Also,
actually, maybe Chargers.
I was going to say that. I think
– white. Yeah, what that was weird.
Surprisingly, that was
kind of white on black.
Surprisingly, that was a bad uni.
Blue on
matchup.
Yellow.
I thought, you know, Chargers have great unis. But the white on black at home in prime time against the and also it was an ugly game, which some of this gets skewed by. But I would say the Jets Browns game was the ugliest uniform game for me. Now the best uniform game, I don't think this is particularly close. Jets Chiefs Sunday Night Football. That was easily the best the Jets have ever looked since I've been watching them. It hasn't been officially announced. We've heard some rumblings, but fully expect the Jets to overhaul their uniforms this season, and it would be a shame if they don't. Just steer into the throwbacks. They can add a black alternate if they want, but that all white, you could have gone with it against the Bills, but the Bills blueberry uniforms is whatever. I loved the Jets Chiefs matchup this year. It's easily the best uniform game. Do you concur?
The Jets. Oh yeah. Jets Chiefs. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's for sure the best one. I mean, there are some other candidates outside of the throwback uniforms that I thought looked pretty good. Like, I think the Raiders game is kind of nice. But, yeah, undoubtedly the Chiefs. The Chiefs game shows the potential of what the throwbacks can look like. I feel like around the league they're too slept on. I see some rankings of, like, best throwbacks this year because we got a lot of them. Most of them have the Jets pretty low. Eagles, severely overhyped. It's very overrated. I don't like the shade of green. The logo is nothing special. It's very simple, boring. I mean, not that these uniforms are any of them. The throwbacks are meant to be super exciting or anything. The boring part is what makes them fun. But I don't know. The Eagles just like this weird shade of green, a black outline with a white number, a logo that is very outdated. I don't know. I don't love it. Jets throwback uniform clears that uniform among the green flying teams,
that.
Especially
right.
with the helmet kind of really sets.
Yeah,
it apart.
I hope they keep the helmet shell.
Yeah.
I hope they keep the helmet shell going forward. All right, worst off-season move. There's a lot to choose from here. It can be a lack of a move. It can be something in particular. I think the obvious one, so I'll just use it before you do. The obvious one is relying on Dwayne Brown and Mekhi Becton at the offensive tackle. That's the obvious one in terms of they really trusted this 40-year-old tackle coming off of a torn rotator cuff who wasn't even that good last year. And a guy in Becton who hasn't played in 2 years coming off of back-to-back reconstructive knee surgeries to protect your Hall of Fame quarterback. That seems far and away the worst move of the offseason. There are a couple other ones you could go with here. They did try to sign Orlando Brown. They did get jumped in the draft to get Broderick Jones. So maybe they just got screwed. But the fact that they didn't have a better plan at offensive tackle when you're going to bring a Hall of Fame quarterback in, would it have made much of a difference this year? Probably not. But the fact that he went down four plays in off of a cut block, which they didn't run ever again after that, I think that's pretty easily the worst offseason move. How about you?
I think it has to be a process sort of thing. You know, like
okay.
Didn't make sense at the time. Well, I mean, like, you know, something that you don't look back and say, like, why didn't you do that? Something that in the moment you thought didn't make sense. Man, there's so many. That really sums this season up, doesn't it? The fact that this is not an easy question. So, I mean, what'd you settle on?
I said, Jesus Christ. I settled on...
I'm just so deep in thought. I need you
to... Relying on Brown and Becton as the OTs.
Okay.
That we knew that was wrong at the time, and... But I said, you know, maybe they got screwed. They drew the line in the sand. I mean, they actually offered to pay Orlando Brown more than the Bengals did. That was the report. And then they had to do the trade for Rodgers. So, you know, I think they kind of just got screwed out of it. I think they wanted to add somebody else. But, you know, at the end of the day, that was a poor plan.
Right.
Anything else?
Well, I would probably take that. But if I'm not going to pick that, I would say signing Dalvin Cook, just because I feel like there were a lot of reasons pointing to why that wasn't going to work out, and it kind of played out exactly how all those reasons pointed to.
I would couple that because, like, I think in the grand scheme of things, they burned, what, $7 million on Dalvin Cook? He sucked, but it's like, all right, they burned $7 million on Cook. I'm just throwing $7 million around. But I would couple that with restructuring Carl Lawson and bringing him back, especially after you got to see him in the offseason.
That's a good one.
It's just wasted money, like, to a guy that's just inactive. And, like, you could go with Lazard. There's a lot of other guys.
And now that money is on the hook for next year as well.
Right, exactly. You could go with not replacing Corey Davis after he retired, and they got saved with Davis's money because if Davis had played, and I wish he had because it would have made things easier, they would have been on the hook for paying him. So him retiring, they at least got that money back. But I guess they viewed it as an all-in year, but they saw Lawson in the offseason. They saw the draft unfolded. They got Will McDonald. They saw Bryce Huff was developing. I know they didn't want to risk in a potential win now year losing their pass rushers and not being able to win with four, but they saw Carl Lawson, that he wasn't quite the same player. They should have cut him in training camp or before, not restructured him and pushed more money into it. So that, coupled with Cook, like, that to me is just wasted money. Everything else, they made some other restructures, but whatever, they were, you know, they're going all in on this year. But those were two moves in August that you didn't have to make, that didn't really make much sense at the time. And so I would kind of couple those. I know that's not completely fair. Now, best offseason move, Michael, a few, and I mean that quite literally, a few you could go with, not many. I mean, it seems like the Rodgers trade shouldn't really be allowed here, especially since they didn't really get to see it come to fruition. So, sans Rodgers trade, what would you go with as the best offensive move? Offseason move, sorry. I can go with it. I mean, this is why you should have written him down beforehand. Jeez.
Oh, okay. Quentin Jefferson.
You want to expound on that? Okay. I like that. Do you have anything else you want to add in his acceptance speech? All right, fine. best offseason move, you said Quentin Jefferson.
No, I mean, it's hard to really, like, who else was a good addition to the team besides him?
Tibben.
Yes, but he wasn't, like, Quentin Jefferson was an above average defensive tackle. I don't know if Tibben was quite there yet. He has the potential.
All right, you know what? I got it. I got the best offseason move. Quincy Williams' contract extension. Getting him for the number that they got him, and then he's developed into the player that he is. They now have him on a very team-friendly deal for a player who's their team MVP. So that's the best offseason move, is their extension of Quincy Williams. Most improved player. Couple candidates for this one. The obvious one, and I'll say it if you want time to think, but Jermaine Johnson. And you could say the same one as me. I mean, that's why we didn't tell each other. But I would say Jermaine Johnson is far and away the most improved player from his rookie year. The jump that he made from rookie year. There's no other option. I mean, maybe a couple other guys, but I don't even think it's worth going. Jermaine Johnson wins this award. Now, most regressed. This is interesting. From 2022 to 2023, Michael, most regressed player. I'm going to go with somebody who wasn't on the team. Alan Lazard. Now, again, he could be used for multiple categories, but I would say the regression from Lazard's campaign last year were, look, like, you know, there were some red flags on tape. You pointed them out. You didn't think he was a receiver two. You thought he was barely a receiver three, which was a take that aged well. But going from leading Green Bay and being their best receiver to not being active at the end of the season, I mean, the regression in a full calendar year for Alan Lazard is pretty drastic. To get it was a 4-year, $44 million deal, but it was essentially a 2-year, $22 million deal. To go from that to being a healthy scratch the last month of the season, that's quite the regression. So I'd go with Alan Lazard, but I don't know if you have somebody else, somebody maybe who was on the team last year.
Lazard would probably be my pick outside of that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, most of the defensive players who returned had at least similar production to last year. Offensively, I mean, Breece and Garrett, I thought, lived up to what they did, and everyone else was just as bad as they were previously. So, I don't know. I think Lazard, I agree with Lazard, because, I mean, my expectations were lower than most, but I think he still was below that, because he was as low as you could get, really, for a receiver. I thought he'd be at least a good complimentary piece. So, I agree.
All right, moment that caused the biggest freak out. This is either positive or negative. Just the most, you know, we've opened some episodes with some of your recorded freakouts. What was the biggest freak? It could be a good moment, it could be a bad moment, but just the most explosive moment of the season for you.
It was definitely winning the Eagles game. I had a huge reaction to that. I was going crazy. I mean, one of my friends growing up is an Eagles fan, and the Jets have never beaten the Eagles, so it was a huge milestone to pull that one off. And it was their second straight win. They were 3-3 going into the bye. We were riding high at that point. So that's one of my all-time, probably second after the Browns game last year. Maybe third after the Bills game also last year. But that one was up there. I was going crazy.
Well, a positive one would be Gibson's punt return week one. We were going pretty nuts.
That too, I was going berserk. I wish I recorded that one.
All the emotion, it feels like a year ago, but just all the emotion from that night, just being stunned silence, that stadium being just dead, and then that return and going crazy in the stands, that was fun. You know, in that moment, I still believe that Aaron Rodgers had an Achilles sprain or an ankle sprain, and he was coming back in a couple weeks. I was still in denial. But I'll go the biggest freakout this season for me, believe it or not, it was a negative one, was the end of half versus Denver when they couldn't get the snap off. That was the biggest, most, like, I embarrassed myself, but just stomping, screaming, cussing. I was so upset. Every single expletive I could think of, I was mad at Hackett and Zach. I was just, because I was just con- convinced they were going to lose. They needed that win. It was just so Jets. It was so ridiculous that that happened. That was the biggest freak out that I've had this season. Moment you felt most dead inside, and you can't say Aaron Rodgers' injury. I have a good one for this, but Michael, do you have one off the top of your head?
Let's see. Well, I'll have one more to add to the freak out on the negative side. The play against New England in week two where Zach Wilson didn't throw the pass on fourth down and he got sacked. I think I was losing my mind at that one.
So I think you said that to
me. Yeah, there's some good negative ones in there. But yeah, moment I felt most dead inside. Lots of good choices. You could even say right now. No, we're doing the awards. We're having fun. On the
podcast. I heard a big yawn at the end of your last answer. I was like, all right, geez. It's only 7:30.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how, you know, that's what talking this team does to you already at this point. We just started the offseason. But I'm going just looking at the schedule here, trying to remember, because there are so many games where I was just like the Homelander meme, just staring at the TV. It was just, you know, blaring on my face without much of a reaction to it. Probably the Browns game. That's the most I probably ever watched. I mean, this game too against New England, but I mean the Browns game, like I was just, that one was weird. Cause it's like, you get a primetime game against a good team at this part of the season where, you know, the Jets are just down and out. That game, I was just kind of staring at the screen. I guess I would say that one.
This one's easy for me. The season never really turned around after this moment for me, but it was walking out of Allegiant Stadium after that Raiders loss.
Yeah.
I have never felt despair like that. No, I'm just kidding. But like first of all, I wore my Zach Wilson jersey because I was like, I don't know how many more times I'm going to get to wear this. So let me wear it. And I was so convinced they were going to win that game going into it. During the game, I was convinced they were going to win it. The way that they lost, and then just the Raiders being the most obnoxious group of fans I've ever encountered. I think I got chirped like 10 or 12 times walking out of that stadium, almost fighting every other guy. I mean, I was just the rage. Maybe not most dead. I felt so much rage leaving that game. And the season never really was the same for me after that. Like, I was so apathetic towards the Jets after that game. I was so upset after that loss. And being in a terrible city and driving home the next day and just disgusted that I
terrible,
spent all that money.
Terrible city, by the way. I don't know how much I addressed that after the Raiders game, but like I took this time in Vegas.
Well,
not impressed.
To get out of it, you had to go down this staircase. And I mean, it was better designed than MetLife, but then people were banging on the metal stairs or whatever. So it was super loud. And then they were doing that stupid Raiders chant. And it was right in my ear. And people were getting in my face. Fuck Zach Wills. Fuck the Jets. And then, you know, it was just I was there with my mom. She's trying to hold me back. It was a low point of the year. So I would say the most dead inside was walking back to the hotel room with just people.
That was the true end of the season.
Drunk Vegas people coming. I love Zach Wilson, bro. Thank you. High five.
We knew from that point, you know, they weren't going to beat Buffalo or Miami. Like that Chargers Raiders sequence was the chance to like, you know, get some wins and, you know, put yourself in a good position, but didn't happen. But yeah, Vegas, I don't know. I went there. It's my first time.
Like that.
I think everyone should go at least once. There's nothing quite like it, but it's not for me. It's very, very commercialized, very trashy. Not my town.
Least favorite player on the team.
there's
a lot for
player.
You to choose here. I can go first if you'd like to. Least favorite player. Yeah, the LFP, there's a few. I know there's a couple. Don't worry, the players get another one. The next one's pro player. But least favorite player, Michael. You want me to go first?
No, I'll go first.
All right.
I'm going to say Lazard.
Really?
He didn't do anything good the whole season. I mean, he had the touchdown against the Chiefs. Outside of that, like, but he's just disappointing because I feel like other players stunk, but I feel like with Lazard there was – a semblance of lack of effort with quitting on routes, not trying on blocks, not focus, and having penalties. Just very frustrating player in every way.
Lazard, not a bad pick. I'm going to go. And I think this is just you rubbed off on me with all the DMs over the last 2 years. But Uzama, this year especially, I was taking a lot of my anger out on Uzama and Cook, the two players that you really shed. But every time Cook got the ball or Uzama blew a block, I would just take my anger out on them. I'm sure Uzama's a fine individual, but man, he stunk this year. And I would say he's probably my least favorite player. But I do attribute a lot of that to you and the negativity rubbing off of me. But next category, yeah. Player who hates you. Now, Michael, I don't have quite the platform you have, so there's kind of a number
of
guys.
Where to begin?
There's a number of people you could go with here, but I'll go with one. I'll lead off. I almost went with this for my least favorite player. I don't have anything to back this up other than he was a JetX subscriber, and I've shat on him a lot on this podcast. I'll go Connor McGovern. I almost went with him for my least favorite player. He has no chance he has any idea who I am, but I had to choose somebody. I would go, I think, McGovern, because I've shat on that guy since they signed – well, not since they signed him. Since he started to stink it up, since he's been here – he's not been good.
Have you had any interactions with someone who may have seen?
I have had. I'm trying to think. This one I didn't write anybody down. We've had I haven't had any negative interactions with the player. I've always been pretty, even we in person or on DMs. A player who hates me.
Anything from a long time ago? I guess it doesn't apply to this season.
I don't think he hates me. You go. I have to think about this one. You have more options. You have a big, much bigger platform to be getting hated on by players. I feel like most of the interactions I've had with players have all been pretty positive. I mean, I don't know.
Same.
Darren Lee, maybe we had, but Darren Lee actually was cool to me, so I don't know. Oh, you know what? I have one. This is a random one. This is nobody's gonna remember this player. He doesn't hate me though, but I used to do before we did this podcast. I did a call-in show when I was in high school. It was shout out to Jet Take. It wasn't it wasn't great, but it was fun. I was learning how to podcast then. It was the audio quality was terrible. It was just me and my friend Kyle Fay. He was just fighting, or we were both barely hit puberty. Our voices were way higher. It was not a good show, but we developed whatever, and we had a few player interviews. And I remember the first player we were ever gonna have on was a linebacker. You might remember him, probably not. Tywan Jones. I don't think he played a single snap. He was just
I remember the name.
He was 2016 or whatever. And I was really excited because I was 16, 15 or 16 years old. And I was very excited that he was going to come on the podcast. And then he, and it was live too. So we would do the live show and we were talking and we were all right, we're going to have Tywan Jones on the show. And so then we were hopping to the other topics, waiting for him to join. And then I remember him seeing his number join. And he had to have listened to about 20 seconds of the show of just two squeakers fighting it out. The most unprofessional show he's ever heard. And he just hung up and left. And I was devastated. I was like, oh, well, there goes our first player interview. We had a few other ones, though. We did have some player interviews. But that was the first ones. Tywan Jones, I guess. Nothing compares to some of the slander you've gotten this year, Michael. Number one player who hates you. I think we all know the runaway favorite for this one. But let's hear it.
Yeah, it's gotta be Jordan Whitehead. He doesn't seem to be the biggest fan, in my opinions. But he does take the time to read my articles, so I appreciate that. So, I mean, as long as he's reading,
that's true. He is definitely reading. He's reading and screenshotting and commenting. He's giving feedback. So he's an engaged reader.
That's the purpose. It's just have good conversations. So
I don't really understand what he's upset about too, because he'll be like, "Why didn't allow 7 touchdowns?" And then you will post a clip of him allowing 7 touchdowns, and then it's like, "All right, well." So then his only argument would be like, "Well, it was somebody else's fault, and I was trying to cover for it."
Exactly.
So he's throwing sauce under the bus for some of those, but a lot of them.
Look, either way. Most of them, I think. Are him. I think he has given up whatever it was, 7 or 8 touchdowns, most in the league. But if it wasn't him, which is always possible, we don't know the scheme, the responsibilities, the pass offs, all these things. Only other option, like you said, is it was someone else's fault. And personally, I wouldn't go on social media insinuating my teammates gave up touchdowns and not me, but I'm not in the NFL, so I don't know how that works.
Yes. All right. Best meme of the season. You had it up behind you earlier, but I would say it has to be the solid toothpaste. Just the lead in too, from just an all time. I mean, I think it was kind of overhyped, but the biggest blunder of the season, probably, with a Hail Mary pick six, then right into a solid toothpaste ad that I've only seen once. I only saw it during that game. No other times. I don't know if the Jets made a call.
Yeah, that's it.
And bought up all the ad buys. I don't know what happened to that ad, but we saw it one time. It was so ridiculous. It was a bad ad. I don't know what he was thinking doing that. It was terrible, but it did produce an excellent meme. So I'm thankful for it. But that would be the best meme of the season. How about you?
A lot of good choices. I mean, we have to give a shout out to NYJ Matt, who had a meme so good that it turned into a celebration on the field.
That's true.
In the last game. So that's a strong candidate for sure. I mean, that has to be the best one, but I just want to think of some other ones because there had to be some good ones throughout the season. Oh, this isn't the best one. I actually hate it, or it makes me sad when I see it. The fact that the Aaron Rodgers intro is like this popular meme now, where it's like anytime someone has something where it's like, you know, this is going to be the biggest thing, and then it's not. Like, I saw people saying, like, me making my run to the gym with my New Year's resolution or whatever, showing that clip. It's like that was the moment for us, like, as Jets fans.
We talked about it on the podcast.
Talked about, like, that exact moment.
He runs out of the tunnel, is going to be absurd. And yeah, I mean, it was goosebumps.
And it lived up to it, but now it just goes down as a joke. So
anytime I hear Thunderstruck,
it's a great meme
too.
If you're not a Jets fan. So
all right, that's good. All right. Worst this is for under refs. Worst call / non-call. So basically the worst, I mean, there's a lot of choices here, but the time the Jets got hosed by the refs.
Lots of choices.
For me, I think it's not calling the blatant hold on Jermaine Johnson against the Chiefs. I think that is to be number one for me.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
Because that was horrible.
I was going to say, you got to start with the Sauce holding call on that Chiefs game.
Was that the same play, or is that – no, those were two different plays, right?
No, two different plays, yeah.
Right, because the Jermaine Johnson hold was the Mahomes scramble, and then later on in the drive, he throws the pick, and they call it on Sauce. The Sauce one, at least there was contact. I could make the argument. The Jermaine Johnson hold – was so obviously and unequivocally a hold, to the point where Jermaine Johnson was slapping him on the head. And am I not mistaken? Did he get a penalty for hands to the face on that?
It might have been a different play, but I know what you're saying. Like, he was, I do remember him.
It was so egregious.
Disengage.
That had to be the worst, but there's a lot of them. I'm trying to think. There were some other ones. What was the other? There was one game in particular.
There was one against
the
Falcons. It wasn't like that costly, but there was like an illegal contact on Sauce that was really egregious.
There's one on Reed too that was bad. There's a couple on Reed this year. Yeah.
It's hard to remember them all because, like, you're mad in the moment, but then you're like, you know what? After the game, you don't really care because the season was over.
All right. Worst in-game coaching decision. So this could either be a play call. This could be a personnel decision. This could be an entire game plan. Just worst in-game, worst coaching decision of the season. But it can't just be like something from the offseason and trying to rely. Just, you know, make it something about the game.
I know what you're saying.
Do you have one off the top of your head?
Not calling that timeout against the Raiders after the big pass play at the end.
He did, though.
He did, but it took too long.
Yeah, but he was screaming and running after him, trying to call it. I mean, it could be on coaching for the players not turning and calling the timeout, but I was watching him. They let so much time tick away when he's screaming and running timeout, and they didn't give it to him. That's more in the rap. Actually, that could go in the worst call, no call. That might actually be it. That was the most egregious. There was another one against Denver, too, where they just let the clock run down. I'm trying to remember the exact situation, but they just let, like, 20 seconds just burn off the clock. The clock was stopped for like 20 seconds or something when it shouldn't have been. And it was the Jets were trying to run the clock down. I don't know, something like that. Worst in-game coaching decision. I'm trying to think of what I would exactly say for this. I almost just want to say their game plan for New England week 3. like the run run pass, like constantly keeping Zach Wilson in the third and longs, kind of reinforcing this conservative mindset. But that doesn't seem too specific enough. Worst in-game coaching decision. This one I actually didn't have one written for. Let's think. Let's brainstorm here. Let me look at the schedule real quick. Is there any that are jumping out to you as the worst in-game coaching decision?
I can't remember. I know there were some throughout the season, but there's just too many for any of them to stick out right now. There were those punts he had against the Browns. I think he had the fourth most cowardly punts of any coach in the league.
Those are pretty bad. I don't know. There's a lot. We could sit here all day for this one. Also, yeah, tweet us your answers for some of these, but we could use some help. Worst coaching decision of the season. All right. This one, personal to the podcast, our best take of the season, Michael. What was our best take of 2023? I'll start. We had a few. I think you had probably more than me, but I would say my best take
you
of the
had
season.
A lot of good ones.
I did have some good ones. I would say my most specific one that did hit was that the Jets would lead the league in safeties this season, because I said the combination of Morstead pinning teams deep and this Jets attacking defensive line, they're going to get a lot of safeties. And they're going to lead the league in safeties. And I said that in like July or something in our stat prediction episode. I remembered it. And the Jets did, in fact, lead the league in safeties. That exact scenario played out a number of times. So I would say that was my best take. We'll see. You know, there's maybe some other ones that could supersede it, depending on what happens this offseason and next season. But what was your best take? You have a few. Now, I can run through some of yours if you'd like me to remind you. So it just doesn't sound so, you know, full of yourself. But obviously the Cook stuff was pretty good. I think if I was choosing for you, I would say you calling out Lazard not being a receiver three or receiver two. Because remember, Hardman then came in over the top and was trying to act like you didn't know what you're talking about, because you said was barely a receiver four. And so you were arguing with players about this, and you couldn't have been more right. Hardman gets traded. Lazard's inactive by the end of the season. Basically, you wrote a lot of tweets around the post-Davis retirement. So I would say that was your best take of the year. There's a couple other ones. I mean, Whitehead. Yeah,
that was a pretty good one, because I don't know, at that time I felt like Lazard was being pegged as a receiver too and could replace Davis, but he never really was that with the Packers. He was at his best when he was the fourth, third target. And then Hardman was kind of the same deal. So I was saying, like, you know, I think these guys are one or two spots too higher in the depth chart than they should be. Wasn't popular at the time. Turned out to be accurate. They did need to add somebody else. I like the Cook one the most, because like I feel like the reason I kind of go back to that a lot is because I think it really supports the way that, you know, a lot of the way that I look at the games, because I put a lot of research into that to say, like, okay, what are they really getting? We know he's a big name and it's exciting, but who is he actually at this stage? And I watched a lot of film and did a ton of analytics work on him, and it all pointed to, like, I don't know, I don't think you should sign this guy. So the fact that a lot of those warning signs did kind of come to fruition, I think, you know, points to the value of, you know, putting work into researching players between both film and analytics. There's always something to be seen there beyond the, you know, the storylines that are thrown out there on the surface level. So I think it is, and I'm going to be wrong evaluating players the same way. I always have been. You're not always going to get it right by doing that. But a lot of times you're going to see things that other people don't, because, or when you do take the time to like go a little bit deeper and say what's really going on. So that's why I like the Dalvin Cook take. Read some bad ones too. That's our next one, right?
Yeah, worst take. And there's a couple I could go with here, because I was kind of on the board of like, I think Lazard's fine in the Robin role for Garrett Wilson. I'm curious how that would have looked with Aaron Rodgers, but that's definitely a bad take. I would say my worst take of the year, this is tough because I had a lot of conviction in this one. I thought DeAndre Hopkins was washed. I didn't think Hopkins would be that good. I didn't think the Jets would sign him. To be fair, they still had Corey Davis at the time, but in hindsight, they would have been so much better off signing Hopkins. But I was just kind of like, all right, they already have a bigger body receiver in Lazard. Ugh, bad take. And then we watched his film. We sat here and watched a couple of his games, and he just looked like he wasn't separating. Clearly, he was battling injuries. There was the reports about his practice habits, and so I didn't want them to sign Hopkins. But we clearly would have been a lot better off if they had Hopkins and Garrett Wilson. So that's definitely my worst take of 2023. What was yours?
Let's try to think. I mean, maybe you could think of one that I missed on. I know I've missed something, so I don't want to make it seem like I'm sitting here like, I was right about everything. Because I definitely wasn't. I'm just trying to think because so many things, you know, didn't go well. That
I mean, you weren't too high on you weren't too high on Quincy Williams.
I got a couple that aren't necessarily related to this season specifically, but going back to the beginning of my thoughts on that player, I was a big Quincy Williams critic, like going back to 2021. Like I think objectively, you know, he wasn't that great that year. He was missing a lot of tackles and he improved a lot each season to last year and then again to this year. But you know, I never thought he's going to be this good or even, you know, good at all. I'll be honest, because he missed a lot of tackles. Like he was a great athlete and the highlights were great, but he wasn't consistent. There was a lot. He was boom or bust. And so I never was a huge believer in him. So huge surprise for him to come this far. It's a great testament to him, coaching staff. I never saw that coming. And then I'll say Jermaine Johnson as well. Like, I don't think I ever saw this level of play coming from him. And that's not to say I didn't think it was possible, but, you know, he coming out was an older prospect, didn't have the best win rate in college. And then last year, he was a good run defender, but the pass rushing was iffy. He didn't have the great consistency. So I wasn't too high in his upside long term. I wasn't sure if he was ever going to become a superstar, but he definitely looks like he's trending in that way now. So those are two guys I was kind of lower on at first, and then they really ended up panning out. So
all right,
I would go with those.
Good. Yeah, we don't have enough accountability in this podcast to talk about some of the good and bad takes.
Also, I would say Solomon Thomas, like he was a player I was very critical of last year. I think he played a lot better this year than last and turned out to be a good re-signing. So those are a few, I would say.
All right. Most annoying. Let us know if you can remember any of our other good and bad takes. Please feel free to tweet us. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm sure I was a little too optimistic on Zach Wilson at times and Becton. I mean, you know, I've probably been too optimistic on some players and sometimes it's worked out when talking about like a guy like Quincy Williams. Like I remember being like, you know, and Jermaine Johnson. And then sometimes it works out where it's like you're talking about how you're optimistic about Mekhi Becton and whatever, you know, and then the reverse is true for you being pessimistic, but it works out. Usually we get to the right place, but tweet us if we have any bad ones we're forgetting, or maybe you have your own. Most annoying NFL commercial, so many to choose from, so many that I can't even really think of one. I just think the quality of commercials you see on television these days is so bad, but I would say the one that is strictly like, most annoying.
I don't think there's effort. I mean, you know more about this than me. You're kind of more connected to that industry. Maybe you could give us some insight. But I feel like there's just not a lot of effort into like making classic commercials.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on this. But I would say we're already going long. I don't want to get into this. I'll just say the most annoying NFL commercial for me, this is just purely because it gives me a headache, is the DoorDash ad that's like so bright and red and it's just bad script and not funny or whatever, but it's so bright and red with a giant QR code trying to get you order food. But I look at it, it's like it burns my eyes and then I have to close. It's like it gave me a migraine a few months ago. So that commercial is triggering to me every time I see that DoorDash ad. But there's a lot that we could go through here. What's your most annoying NFL commercial? I think
I was like, I'm going to jump out the window if I see this again, which I will again, definitely watching football. But it's like that ESPN bet commercial where there's like, they're in a bar or something and they're like, you're betting against the home team or whatever. I don't know. It's just so stupid and cheesy and poorly written. It's like, what am I supposed to take out of this?
Is that
supposed to find that funny? Is that supposed to make me want to bet? I don't know. But it makes me cringe every time.
It's a good bet.
Maybe that's the goal.
That's a good bet.
In addition to that, I feel like whenever you watch the NFL, probably 30 to 40% of the commercials are like some, you know, some drug they're trying to get you to buy, and they're just like dancing while they describe all the side effects.
Oh, the one where they break the fourth wall
after you take it.
Yeah, no.
But there's that one.
No, the pharma ads are probably number one. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There's a lot. All right, there's a lot we can get into here, but let's keep it moving. I don't need to burn any bridges, Michael. All right, dumbest quote of the season. There's been a lot of them.
I think we're gonna
there's
get
a
any
lot to choose from.
Anything anytime soon? There's no, no bridges that we're burning. But
that's true.
Dumbest quote. Probably.
I have one. There's a
man,
couple
that's a
today.
Lot. The last few
there's
weeks.
A couple have, today.
Even today have.
Oh, you want one?
What here's, was the here, one you sent from
here's,
Douglas?
Here's Joe Douglas today. They asked why Robert's the right coach, whatever. Robert is the right coach because he is the right man for the job. Just that. All right, sweet. That answers that. That's cool. There's a few of them. There's, I mean, there's all the stuff that we were talking about where like Saleh was just kind of like, I mean, first of all, Joe Douglas had another one today that was like hindsight is 20/20. I think he said that a number of times. There's how many players had to say, they described how close we are. Saleh's had a number of ones this last week that you've, or this last month that you've called out for him lying. Dumbest quote. Can I attribute it to a beat writer for saying that the Jets not signing Josh Dobbs was the biggest blunder of this season? Can I attribute that to, maybe don't go there, but
that's a good one.
That might be the dumbest quote of this. Yeah, I might go with that one. And also,
I think Saleh recently saying that the offense has improved and citing that they scored 30 points a couple times was pretty ridiculous, especially because they weren't playing the greatest teams and they had a lot of help scoring those points. That was a pretty ridiculous quote. I think Rodgers had a pretty bad one today. He was like, all the stuff in this building, or he's like, all the bullshit in this building that doesn't have to do with winning, we got to get all that out of here. I'm pretty sure you're the source of most of that. I don't think anyone else is really not focused on winning except you,
you know,
going on ESPN every week, you know, talking about things that
fuck,
maybe don't have to
Jimmy
do with
Kimmel.
Winning.
We don't care.
So, that was a pretty ironic quote. I don't know.
I guess it's ironic, but like I get what he said. I think he's talking about the football operation. He's not talking about the media appearances.
But
he's
like they're bad.
I think he's calling for Hackett for the Goldfinger slideshows in the middle.
So then why
of
are we keeping
meetings.
It? I don't know what he's talking about. Like who's not focused on winning? I think they're just bad at trying to win. I don't see other than him. I don't see anyone who's not focused on football, like non-football stuff. Maybe he's talking about Sauce playing Fortnite, but Sauce is one of the only people
I think he's
who
talking about the actual
plays up to his
maybe he's
potential.
Calling maybe he's calling out Saleh's like team meetings where he's talking about the crows pecking at necks and the Mount Everest, and maybe he's like, let's get all the non-football bullshit out of these team meetings.
The magician or the illusionist.
Yeah, stop. Yeah, don't bring that guy back in. Get the ping pong tables out of the locker room. I don't know. All right. These get increasingly more unhinged. A couple more here.
Oh, wait, one more. There's one more dumb quote. There's the one that Hackett said about he didn't realize Breece was a good receiver until midseason. Like, what do you even say about that one? Like, we were all talking about that all offseason, and then you don't know until you see him make a big play halfway through the year. Okay.
Well, at least Breece's development as a receiver is pretty encouraging. Because he, to be in Hackett's defense, I mean, like, look, if you just watch Breece Hall at Iowa State, you'd know that the receiving potential he had, and he made some plays last year that were great. But the beginning of the season, I remember I was getting frustrated. He had a few bad plays and had a few bad drops and whatnot. But yeah, it's like, why were you not using your second best, maybe your best weapon on offense as a receiver when you can't do anything and you were struggling to run the ball? Whatever.
He did
all
end
right,
up
with
almost 100. He had 95 targets, so in fairness, they did end up giving him plenty of targets.
Yeah, well, how many of those came in November and December? Yeah, all right. Player most likely to have a book bag filled with loose papers. Player most likely to have a book bag filled with loose papers and no folders. Which I guess just means unprepared.
Can you
think
explain?
Back to
this is a
grade.
Great,
that
a great analogy
shoving homework.
You made.
Yeah.
We were talking before the podcast.
Yeah. Right. We're talking before the podcast about trying to be more organized, and I was just saying how I just feel sometimes like the kid in fourth grade who's just putting homework just directly into the backpack and no folders, and he's taking his homework out. It's all crumpled. You know, it's like we're just talking about trying to be more organized. But I guess this is, yeah, this can apply to players. They have to do film study. It's, I guess, least prepared players, I guess, what this means. Least detail-oriented player. So player most likely to have a book bag filled with loose papers and no folders. A few candidates here. I have one.
Doesn't necessarily mean they're not smart. It's just like an organizational style, you know? Just like they figure they could stuff it all in there.
They might be the smartest kid in the class. They just...
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So who would this be? Who do you think this applies to? I have one. You want to hear it?
Let's hear it.
Lazard. I think this. I just picture Lazard. I just picture Lazard with this question. I don't know exactly why, but I just
picture
Lazard.
He does have glasses, though. He does wear glasses.
Yeah, so like, yeah. But he's out there at practice maybe kicking a soccer ball. I don't know how dialed in. I don't know how dialed in and detail oriented that guy is, and some of the mental mistakes he made on the field. I just think, yeah, he seems to me like the player with no folders. You got one?
I'm gonna say Sauce.
What? Sauce does his homework. What does that mean? What the hell?
We just said it doesn't necessarily mean he's not organized. I think he's such a here's my reasoning. No, okay. Listen, like he spends a lot of time streaming, playing Fortnite, to the point where if he wasn't as great as he is, people would be criticizing him a lot for it. But he's so great and he's so good at preparing, he's so smart that he can do both at a high level.
Okay.
And he doesn't have to be like, so he's just gifted, is what I'm saying. Like, I think feels like he's such a genius that he would just throw all his papers right in his backpack. He'd yank it out.
That's true.
And he would know what everything is. The same way that, like, you know, for another analogy, like a kid could have terrible handwriting and scribble it down, and it's like a secret language that only he knows. But yet the most profound thing you've ever read.
I see Zach Wilson as the kid in class who's like taking hyper detailed notes and different pen colors, and he has different sticky notes for each subject, and then he bombs the test. So, you know,
I was the opposite. I took like no notes in school.
No, I was
pretty good.
I was the student just putting my homework straight to the back. All right, player most likely to be left to eat by himself in the cafeteria. I think you wrote this one. Michael, who do you have? Player most likely to be left to eat by himself in the cafeteria.
There's a few that came to mind. And
maybe the guy
many times in high school. I'll be for real. I moved into my high school new, so I was, you know, sitting by myself for a little bit.
That's typing up some Jets articles. Self-deprecation before you be mean to some of these players.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the whole point here. Like, this is coming from a place of experience. There's some good. I feel like you disagreed with me on this one, but I feel like Clemens could be that type of guy. Just he's so intimidating. It's like no one wants to be near him. Even like the cool kids group might even be like, we don't go that far. Like he would. That guy's gonna mess us up.
All right, Clemens is a bold choice. This is tough. I mean, our guy Tim Boyle over here was reported to potentially have been a mole in the building, but I like Tim. Tim was very personable. Tim was maybe the nicest athlete we've ever talked to, so I don't want to slander Tim too much. He seems like he would have some friends. I mean, Uzama seems like he could maybe get annoying, but again, I don't know him, so I don't know. This is you wrote this question. I'll throw you.
I'll say that.
Here. I mean, let me really think. Let me really think about this. Who? I mean, the special teamers they sit by themselves, you know?
Yeah, so, they're at their own table.
It's like Morstead, Hennessy, and Zerline over here. I don't know. I don't have an answer for this one.
Lazard.
Oh, yes, right. All right, you're right. All right, I'll use Lazard again. I'll just bully Lazard. All right, whatever. all right, best at – or no, sorry. We'll go with this one because this is more in line with the ones that – this is another out-of-pocket, just ridiculous question. But player you would be most likely to outperform at their job. Now, most likely is very key here because we're just talking one single rep. What's the highest chance, which is like maybe – it could be 0.0001% chance.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, instead of 0.00001% chance. So what player would you have the highest percent chance – at outperforming them on one rep? Do you have an answer? I have one.
Well, immediately we have to rule out any trench players because you're absolutely never blocking someone successfully or getting around an offensive lineman successfully. Actually, I mean, maybe he could slip once, one out of a million reps, but that's not happening.
Use my jiu-jitsu. Neither
of those things.
I mean, I'll roll right under him.
I guess it has to be a receiver because he could drop a wide open screen pass that you would catch. That's something that can and does happen pretty frequently. And as long as I catch that thing and fall forward a yard, I outperformed him. So that's something that realistically could happen. So
all right, I have one.
Got to bully Lazard again and say.
No, I have one.
He would be the guy?
I'm going to say on a given rep, low chance, but this is my best chance to replace Xavier Gibson pulling on a block for Breece Hall. Because I think we would be equally as ineffective. There's a small chance I could be slightly more effective if I just trip over myself and maybe the linebacker, whatever, just falls over. Whatever. I think there's a chance I could maybe cause.
Hackett have him blocking Crosby or Garrett, Miles Garrett.
Yes, exactly. So I'm saying I think I would have about the same amount of chance that David Gibson. I mean, you'd have a better chance.
He has 190 pounds, though.
All right. Use some judo. All right. You're right. I would probably, I would die. I'm just saying.
No, most likely. We said most likely.
Right. Exactly. All right. Best athlete on the team. This is actually a somewhat serious one, and then we'll end with a funny one again. Best athlete on the team, Michael. There's a lot of different ways you could go with this. Will McDonald might have a chance for this one soon. Bryce Huff certainly has a chance at this one. But I'm going to say week to week, the athlete that I'm most impressed with is Garrett Wilson. I love watching Garrett Wilson. I think some of the plays that he's made, and it's a shame that we haven't really got to see him fulfill his potential. But just some of the acrobatic catches and leaps into the air and jukes after the catch that we see from Garrett Wilson is always just so cool to watch. And he's one of those players that years after his career, you'll be able to watch his highlights and be like, damn, this is one of the coolest guys. I mean, he's probably the coolest receiver I've gotten the chance to watch on the Jets. So, and he's had shit quarterbacks for 2 years. He hasn't really gotten a chance to really go off. So I'm hoping we get that in 2024. I'll say best athlete, Garrett Wilson. Who would you go with?
I thought of a couple here, but I think Will McDonald. I mean, just pure athleticism. He's a really good choice. And you see flashes of it on the field with his bend. Really, the bend is what stands out the most. Like, he has some great plays where he is able to turn the corner. So I think he's a good choice, but Sauce also came to mind because what stands out to me when I watch him the most is like guys who are as tall and long as him aren't supposed to move the way he does. He moves like he moves like a guy who's 5'8", slot corner, has all the quickness in the world, but lacks, that makes up for the lack of size. But he has all the size and all the quickness, and that makes him really unique in that regard. So those are two that come to mind.
That's a good one. All right. Last question for the CYJ Awards. It's been a pleasure. Best controversy with Michael Nania. There's been so many this year, Michael, more so than any season I can recall. You get quite a bit of hate. Some of it deserved, most of it not. People are stupid, but there's been a lot.
Most deserved.
A lot of them have been pretty funny. I mean, as a third-party observer getting to watch, it's pretty funny. But you're in the eye of the storm a lot of times, so I know it can be stressful. But also, you just turn the phone off and who cares? Who gives a shit? But like, Nania Gate number one with this Pats logo. A lot of people upset about it. There's been a few other ones.
Yeah, it's a great one.
I mean, Jordan Whitehead coming at you. That was one. We had videos from a kid's Taekwondo class. Veiled threats from
another great one.
Garden gnome. There's a lot of them.
Really good choices.
So what would you
go back even earlier in the year? Go back even earlier in the year. If you remember the fan who was leaking the Rodgers trading confirmation, who deleted his account.
That's it. That's the best one. The Jets Reddit.
That's probably the best one.
I peek on Jets Reddit every once in a while, and then I go and see it. And every once in a while, somebody will mention it. They really hate you for that, which doesn't really make much sense because it's like, I mean, I get why they're mad. They're just mad they lost their guy. But like he was posted, for anybody who doesn't know, there was somebody on Jets Reddit who was leaking, or he was posting story. And like there's a lot of people who do this, but this guy seemed legit. He had had a number of stories that he had broken, and just some anonymous account on Reddit who's posting stories onto Jets Reddit. And so this was like Jets Reddit's little secret, but he was getting pretty big. It wasn't like he was just some underground guy. Like he was the most talked about thing on that subreddit. And then Nania, you saw it, I saw it, and I forget exactly what he'd posted, but you posted it on Twitter to be like, hey, this guy
it was during the time when we were all thirsty for Rodgers news. We all wanted the confirmation it was going to happen, and he had said that. And maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but I don't think he actually was that big. It was just he posted that, but people went through his history and saw that he had hit on a lot of very specific things, like this guy is going to be on injured reserve this week, or this guy, like I think he said, like Max Mitchell is going to be out for the season in 22, like very specific stuff. So they had gone back and checked that, see, like, hold on, this is legit. Obviously, it turned out to be right. This is get Rodgers
some connection.
Right. So yeah, I just thought that was pretty cool. So I posted it here, and then he deletes account. They're like, "No, why'd you do that?"
Yeah. Well, I mean, you did. I mean, you smoked him out.
I think that's absolutely hilarious. So
yeah. Well,
I think it's very funny.
You regret it? Are you trying to make amends to Jets Reddit, or do you not care?
No. I don't think I regret anything I did last year. Cue the Conor McGregor.
This is the psychopath game I'm working with, folks. I don't know.
I would like to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Well, Michael, it's been quite the season. Let's do it again. Hopefully, it ends somewhat.
Maybe we
better.
Will try to aim for fewer controversies this year.
I know.
That would be.
I know. That would be nice. That would be nice. I'd swear. I mean, I just have to sit back and watch people slander you. You had some great takes. We had some bad moments. The season sucked. This fan base is ready to kill each other at times, but we're ready to do it all again, Michael. 2024, it's our year. We're going to make the playoffs. I'm ready for it. It's a big offseason, and we're ready to enter this offseason, exercise some demons, patch the holes, get optimistic again, have about 10 other Nania controversies, and then we can call it a year. So looking forward to 2024. I appreciate everybody who's stuck with us, listened to our podcast. I know we were a little inconsistent the last couple weeks of the season, but we do have grand hopes for this offseason and staying consistent. We have a few pods we're planning out, a few interviews we're excited about. So I promise we're not lying about that. So let's hope we have a great 2024 and kick this off with a good podcast. So thank you, everybody, for listening. You can follow us at CYJ Pod on Twitter. Michael underscore Nanny, and myself, Ben W. Blessington. Go to Jets X Factor YouTube to subscribe to the channel. Go to jetsxfactor.com to read all the other great work at Jets X Factor. Check out the other pods there as well. If you can, please rate, review, subscribe on our iTunes. That helps the pod out a ton. I think that's it. Let's get out of here. All right, we'll be back next week. We'll make a list of things the Jets need to do in the offseason. It'll be fun. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week.